Hurry into Menards right now and save big money. Miracle-Gro raised bed soil helps you grow bigger, more bountiful plants. It provides the right foundation your plants need to thrive with a 100% organic formula that requires no mixing. Add Miracle-Gro raised bed soil to help your plants grow with organic nutrients you can count on. Visit our garden center or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game in the Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. And, of course, we are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heat, and Cooling and Electrical Game Studios. Predators get a win last night, 2-1, over the Winnipeg Jets. D-Mays, Willie D, how we doing?
Feeling good.
Rainy. It is gross out today. Nick Kieser behind the glass as well. Nick, how we doing?
Doing great, guys. Pretty happy to see the Preds get a pretty big win last night, and we're ready to roll.
Let's do it. Jonathan good Hutton, job. Outkick 360, will join us in 1 hour, and I want to talk to him about this. Because I was listening to Amy Adams-Strunk. She did a one-on-one interview with Mike Keith. It was a great sit-down. Highly recommend. Rand Carthon did the same thing, dug a little bit deeper behind his past, his philosophy, so on and so forth. And Amy Adams-Strunk said something that stood out to me. And I want to get your thoughts on it as well. Amy Adams-Strunk with Mike Keith.
He was so excited, and he was just like, I can't wait to get back and start working on that championship for you, Miss Amy. And, you know, so if that's my mission to him, you know, I know there's going to be some difficult decisions that have to be made and, you know, maybe some change. I know they're going to evaluate, so I'm going to let them, you know, have their time to do that. But I think, you know, we're just going to, like, be excited for the steps that come because I know down maybe next year, the year after. I'm not really sure, but I know we have a Lombardi Trophy in our future.
Okay, so again, Amy Adams-Strunk sitting down with Mike Keith. And it's a lot of we're excited about the future. We see a Lombardi Trophy in our near future and all of the things that you expect an owner to say on a day where everybody wins the press conference, on a day that everybody's very excited about the new GM and a new era and woohoo, go team. But there was one thing that she said in there that kind of made me perk up a little bit. She was talking about the Lombardi Trophy, and I know to get there, we might have to make some tough decisions. Mm-hmm. There might be some changes coming down. So I instantly think, well, what kind of tough decisions are those? What kind of changes are those? And it could be something as simple as, you know, they're just changes. You know, new GM. Could be as simple as the changes that we know have happened or are on the horizon. A new offensive coordinator, a new GM. Might be some tough decisions about who's going to come in here. But could it be more massive changes beyond what we already know? Your interpretation of what Amy Adams-Strunk had to say there.
I think she's talking a two-window period here. Two-year period, excuse me. This upcoming offseason and next offseason, there's going to have to be a lot of changes. It's just inevitable. This is an older team. They do have some young talent, but a lot of their talent is, you know, getting older in a sense. So there's going to have to be some decisions made with Derrick Henry. There's has to be some decisions made with Ben Jones, Taylor Lewan, you know, Kevin Byard, and more importantly, Ryan Tannehill. And I think even with Bud Dupree and Taylor Lewan, you know, those guys that are still under contract, those are decisions – big decisions that are going to have to be made this offseason and subsequently the next offseason. But I listened to it yesterday. I had a chance to listen to a bit of it when Jared was playing it. And then I got a chance to listen to some more of it on my own. And what I said yesterday, I'm starting to believe it even more. Rand Carthon is sort of he's going to be the guy that sort of tilts the pendulum one way or the other. I think one person wants to move on from Ryan, or maybe both of them wants to move on from Ryan, but they want to see, you know, what Rand thinks about it. Or they both want Ryan to stay, but they want to see what Rand thinks about it. Because I think ultimately, Amy's going to lean in regards to building a championship team. She's going to lean a little bit more heavy on Rand because of where he's come from, the teams, the stops that he's made. And she's pointed that out. Even Mike Vrabel pointed it out. Like, you know, I respect because of the places he's been and the success that those teams have had. And he's been a part of that one way or another, whether it be going out and scouting college, going out and scouting pro, coming back, giving his evaluation. And people think highly of his evaluation. So to me, Amy's looking at it like either I want Ryan Tannehill, Vrabel wants him, or Vrabel doesn't, or Vrabel do. I don't, but Rand, you're the guy that I'm going to trust because of where you come from, the team they're building in San Francisco, what they did with the LA Rams. So I'm going to lean on you in regards to that. So they're waiting on him to make his evaluation, and I think that's one of the biggest moves that she's potentially talking about is the quarterback.
I think the reality is if John Robinson were still the GM, I think she might have said the exact same thing. I look forward to the change. They were going to have to make changes. Every year, every roster makes changes. That's just the NFL, right? It just, you have guys who sign a contract because of the rules of the salary. If a guy's not living up to his contract, you get cut. If a guy has a huge year and plays beyond his contract, you got to be thinking about that. How do I sign him to the next contract before I lose him? Like, it's a constant shift. There's changes every year. I think what jumps out at me there is, look, she's got to be out front. She got ripped for not really being out front of the John Robinson thing, and she put her foot down and said, I'm changing GMs. And she changed a GM that won 61% of the games. 61%. So that's, the bar's high, right? So, yeah, it's a lot of it is she's got to be excited because she's kind of put her reputation on the line because this will be remembered as a move that she made to change GMs when a guy was doing pretty well. She's rolling the dice that it can be better. And that is legit thinking, right? We've seen many people, many times in sports, make that assessment. We've been good, but I think we can do better. Sometimes that turns out to be true. Sometimes 5 years later, like, man, we were doing a lot. We weren't bad. You know, I remember those days. We were pretty good. What happened? You know, so we'll see. But everything about Rand Carthon so far is positive. I mean, just really like him. But I think she's curious to see, kind of like with D-Mace. What ideas does he bring to the table to make them better?
Typically, you see that with players where they try to get ahead of the curve. Well, let me, you know, release this player because we don't want to keep him too long. And then, you know, we're not getting any production. So you usually see it with a player that, you know, at the end of the season, you know, somebody gets cut and everybody's thinking like, wow, why did they cut that person? Well, they cut that person because they're projecting that their production will decline. So they're trying to get ahead of the curve and they're trying to either trade them away to get some assets or releasing them and let that player go and get a team. Very seldom do you see it with GM or head coach, because when you got a good GM or a good head coach, you try to keep them. But it seems like she, in regards to the GM, she was sort of like, listen, we've rode this train as long as we can ride it. I need to get, you know, we need to get a new train and that's going to take us into the new stadium and beyond. Let me get ahead of it now because I see a few red flags with the bottom of the roster. It's not built up, so I need somebody that can do that and strengthen my team.
And to that point, I think that quarterback absolutely can be on the table. Because, Willie, to your point, she would have said that whether it was John Robinson, whether it was Rand Carthon, whether it was D-Mace coming in as general manager of the Tennessee Titans. So maybe it's beyond just general manager. Maybe it is quarterback. Maybe it's changes that were going to happen regardless. But I think the key here is it's not John Robinson. You know, maybe they would have made changes. I'm sure they would have made changes if John Robinson was the general manager. But are there changes that are beyond just roster changes? Are there changes that are going to have to be made that are beyond the quarterback? Because I do think that quarterback absolutely is in the conversation when you talk about the changes that are going to be made here. But I do wonder, Is it change specific to the general manager? Is it change that's beyond the roster? Is it change that has to do with the culture as a whole? And that's what I want to get into coming up next. And, of course, your calls, your texts, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
From your perspective, what is it about Rand that's going to make this collaboration work?
Well, I just believe in his history. I believe in where he's been, in his pedigree, and what he believes about making relationships. You know, it's coach's job is to teach, develop, and inspire through making a connection with the player. And that can't change whether it's where we bring him in or making connections with his staff or my staff. You know, it's different. You know, it's different than where it was 20 years ago when he played or when I played. I mean, it just is. Paul, I know it's January and you're still going to interrupt me, but I'm just trying to answer the question that we have to be able to get to know these guys and what they go through and the people in our building. And when you stop and you ask how somebody's doing, you have to be willing to stand there and listen to them instead of just walking by. And that starts with me and remembering that, not just walking by and say, hey, how you doing today? It's like, no, if you're going to willing to ask the question, stop, stand there, and figure out how you can help somebody.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel in his media availability last Friday. And when I heard him say that, I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, we're going to have to have conversations with people, get to know the players on a deeper level. You know, don't just stop by somebody in the hallway, say hi, and continue with your day. Stop and have a conversation with somebody. When I heard that, I was like, that's interesting that he would say that, because that's not something that you would say if it, one, wasn't a priority of yours, and two, wasn't already instituted within the culture of the building.
I think it's been a priority of Mike's because this, and it's not a bad thing. Actually, it's a good thing. This generation, I think you have to pay a little bit more attention to. You have to show them a little bit more love. It's like their love language is words of affection.
Attention.
Exactly. Attention. So this generation. So you have to give it to them. Whereas, you know, Willie, when we was coming up in sports, he was just like, hey, you wanted to avoid the head coach. It was like, I'm going the other way.
It was probably a little more fear.
Exactly.
Right? Absolutely. There was a lot of, you know, the assistant coach might be the guy you have a little talk with. But the head coach a lot of times was a little bit of that, you know.
He was on like on the pedestal.
Like, ooh. The coach wants to talk to me? Oh, boy.
And you know, I started to see that when I went to Baltimore, how they were a little bit more personable, how the owner was out with the players, having conversations with the players, inviting players, you know, hey, you know, come over and, you know, have a good time. We can have, you know, talk or whatever. They were noticing that, you know, if we show more attention to these men, the things, you know, they will go that extra yard for you. If you are not paying attention to them, if you don't want to know about their families or anything else, they typically turn away from you. There's been situations when I was in Baltimore and, you know, it was our first, I think it was our second year. And, you know, the family just wasn't adjusting, you know, the way that you would want them to. I was, because I had my friends in the locker room, but they were not. And, you know, the organization got wind of it and they talked to my family, like, what's going on? Everything's okay. I want to make sure, because they understood, like, we got to reach out, not just to the player. We got to reach out to his family. And that's one thing I do really enjoy about Vrabel. It's not just about the player. It's about his family, because if things are not right at home, he can't come to practice and be himself. He can't come to practice and be 100%. So if you're just paying attention to him and not his family, you're doing a disservice. But Vrabel's like, listen, if I ask you how you're doing, I'm going to stop and I'm going to listen. Now, if you don't want to tell me at all, that's up to you. But I'm not going to say, hey, how you doing, and keep walking. I'm going to say, hey, stop you. How you doing? What's going on? Is there anything you need to tell me? And then you move on. Because when you do that, you open up that relationship that hasn't been there for many, many years in the NFL.
And I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think it's important. I think that's the culture that this team wants to build, mm-hmm. and that's a positive thing. But why would Mike Vrabel bring that up if that's not what they had within the building? That's why that stuck out to me. And when I listened to Paul Kaharsky on Robbie and Rexroad this morning, something kind of clicked. This was Paul.
I think, you know, they're hitting the word collaboration in a big way, but, you know, in conjunction with that, I think there's going to be less ego. And I don't know that John started off with the big ego, but after some success, I think there wound up being a lot of ego involved in things. I think he set himself up with a lot of people that agreed with him. And I think, you know, ultimately if he had people who were disagreeing with him around him, he wasn't ultimately listening to them. I just felt like, you know, he took the buck stops here very seriously. And, you know, he had some good results with some of those decisions early on, and that kind of buoyed his confidence in terms of, I don't want to call him a maverick, but he certainly had a great deal of swagger. And you like that swagger to a degree, but, you know, it's a real seesaw there, and it can only take one bad move to kind of start to move your thing in the other direction. And we saw that happen pretty quickly for Vrabel. You know, what, 2019 was a fantastic draft, and things, you know, we saw a move that took things apart pretty quickly for him. And I get the sense, you know, off the little bit we know, and I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people in the background that I have too, that Rand's a pretty humble guy. And I don't know that success will take him far away from that. And I'm not trying to take shots at John. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Paul Kaharsky saying the changing of the guards in terms of the general manager, it will be a lot less ego. Mike Vrabel mentions, you know, we need to get to know our players on a deeper level. Mm-hmm. Paul's saying, hey, maybe John Robinson's ego grew to be just a little bit too big for that building, and he pushed himself out.
Well, if you think about it, he was a complete unknown when he came in. Like, Rand Carthon, his dad having been a player, like, he's the Carthon name, that's a football name. He's from a football family. And I think because of the backdrop of this hire, too, a historic hire, he comes in with a little more fanfare than John Robinson, who was like, who's John Robinson? Like, okay, so Belichick, okay, so behind the scenes. You know, not a lot of fanfare for John Robinson. And as he started building, as we like to say, the skins on the wall, mm-hmm. you know, they no losing seasons, right, while he was there. Good hire in Mike Vrabel, some good drafts, way more success than his two or three guys that preceded him. Mm-hmm. I can see why you start trying to build a little bit of swagger to you and maybe a little bit more confidence and authority to try to stand up for what you believe in. And maybe there were more clashes. Maybe you don't feel like you defer to your head coach as much when you really feel strongly that you're good at what you do. I don't know. I mean, I think this is what happens in everyday life, mm-hmm. too, where, you know, people grow and challenges arise. How do you handle those challenges? The one thing I couldn't help but think about, though, while Paul was laying out that theory, was the A.J. Brown trade. Like, the stop the guy in the hallway. Remember when A.J. Brown was going through a lot and he had that very emotional press conference and he talked about how much he appreciated Mike Vrabel? He talked about killing himself, right? He was very upfront, A.J. Brown, that he was having suicidal thoughts. He had to go through some therapy, but he talked about how important it was to have Mike Vrabel there. So Mike Vrabel had made that investment mm-hmm. that you're talking about, Derek, as a person, right? And A.J. Brown was open about that, and then a year later he's traded. So you do wonder, when you make that investment and you know the person, yeah, we can talk about all the goofy things that AJ was doing on social media, mm-hmm. the tweets that were out there and put back and swinging the baseball bat and wanting the money, but I think Mike Vrabel saw through that and was still like, look, I know AJ, mm-hmm. we'll get this worked out. And then boom, the trade happened. I do wonder how that affected the relationship between Vrabel and Robinson.
Well, I mean, it could have, but I don't think.
Yeah, this is all theory. I have no idea.
I don't think that.
Oh, totally theory. Yeah.
I don't think that move you know, fire Mike, I mean, not Mike, to fire John was made because of the AJ. I think it was she looked at her roster and she said this bottom half, after players started going down, because if you look at the timeline, you know, to me, if she was upset, she would have, if it was just the AJ thing, then, you know, we would have heard about this throughout the season. Like, there's been some grumblings about, you know, Amy's not, she wasn't satisfied with the AJ trade. She really didn't want to do it, but she listened to her GM or head coach, whoever. I think she really looked at her roster. And when guys started going down and his team started losing, she was like, we got to get somebody else in here because this roster isn't what I thought it would be. And I feel John has done all he can, and now we need to move on. I do believe her when she said it wasn't just the AJ thing. You know, AJ was a part of it, but I think that was more so just like the cherry on top. Like, okay, we went through all this. Look, I'm looking at my roster, and my roster's not good. The bottom half of my roster isn't good. And then we trade away, you know, arguably, you know, the second, you know, first or second best offensive weapon that we have. So we got to move in another direction. I don't think it was solely because of the AJ trade, but it had something to do with it. But I think she just assessed her roster and was like, you know, we had a good run, but my roster moving forward, I think she's always thinking about that stadium. Like, what do I want to take into that new stadium? And the roster that I'm looking at now isn't the roster I want to take into the new stadium. So we got to move in another direction.
Especially if what seems to be the case is that you're not looking for a full rebuild. Right, the Raiders tried to almost do the full rebuild, mm-hmm. thinking, okay, by the time we get to Vegas, we've got that new stadium, we're going to be really good. It really hasn't come to fruition. They tried. I think the Titans are of the belief, it looks to me anyways, they're going to make changes. They're going to retool. But they don't look like they're sitting there going to just clear the decks, tank for Tua, anything like that. It doesn't look like that's coming. Right, I think they feel like they can be better just by drafting well, mm-hmm. making smart decisions, smart trades, smart free agent pickups, the right scouting to find those diamonds in the rough to improve, like you're saying, the roster as a whole. And I think most teams do it that way now. Like, unless they completely have the wheels fall off, they don't just decide, you know, go with from they are now to let's just clear that. Like the Eagles. You know, look how they have retooled themselves since the last time they won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a full rebuild. They had Carson Wentz. It didn't work. They kept evolving, kept swimming around there. They were okay for a while. They had some good years, some bad years. All of a sudden, boom, they make the trade for A.J. Brown. Jalen Hurts takes a big jump, and you got a really good team that might win it again.
And I don't think that this team, between Amy Adams Drunk and Mike Vrabel and the culture of this organization, has it in its DNA to just completely tear everything down, intentionally lose, pull the tank for Tua, and then get a really great draft pick. I never thought that that organization had it in them. So I don't think that's what's on the horizon. But Demis, to your point about after the Eagles game, this team wasn't losing. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, yes, they got embarrassed by the Eagles. That was a bad game and a bad loss. And the A.J. Brown trade was on display there that we learned maybe that wasn't the best move. But they just lost to the Bengals only by 4 points. You know, that was a hard-fought game. They were 7-5 at that point, and only 2 weeks earlier they went into Lambeau Field and they beat Green Bay. At that point, when John Robinson was fired, the Titans still were on pace to win the division. They were 7-5. Did it look great after the Eagles game? No. Mm-hmm. But this team still felt like it was on an okay trajectory, which is why I thought, why fire him now? Why fire him, you know, why even make that move right now? Yeah, the roster top to bottom didn't look great. The A.J. Brown trade didn't look great. They were dealing with so many injuries that really very few teams, if any teams, I think, in the league would be able to overcome it. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, looking at what Amy Adams Drunk said about changes, Paul's point about the ego that maybe John Robinson's head just grew big, too big for that organization, and also the plans that I think the Titans have in place, it could point toward that was ultimately John Robinson's demise. And I want to get into that coming up next. And of course, your thoughts, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline Willie, D. Mays, 1025, 1063, The Game.
I think that I think it can work from the standpoint of, even if you're not saying it publicly, like the way I read it was, Mike Vrabel's in charge. I mean, that's how I read it. And, you know, I think one of the best things that you can have out of a general manager is low ego, because, you know, you evaluate players, and then at some point you're turning them over to the coaching staff. And so, you know, I think rather than feeling like you deserve the credit, rather than you feel like, you know, guys aren't delivering on, you know, the talent that you maybe drafted, you know, I think the willingness to just to be able to turn it over and kind of put the ego aside, I think is probably a bigger factor than, hey, you know, who does everyone think has the final say on somebody? And so I think that, I believe that Mike Vrabel ultimately, like if he wants a player, he's going to keep a player, that type of thing. I mean, that's how I expect it to happen. That being said, you know, I don't think that he is necessarily going to take the approach of, hey, I have to make every decision. Like, I am going to trust people that are here to do their job.
There you go. That was Tim Hasselbeck on the show yesterday. What really stood out to me was he said the best GM, in his opinion, is one that doesn't have ego. Paul Kaharski on Robbie and Rex Road this morning saying, hey, maybe John Robinson's ego is what got in the way. And that's going to be one of the biggest changes in the Rand Carthon era is less ego. And I look at the word that has been shoved down our throats by the Tennessee Titans organization, and that's collaboration. And I think that that makes so much sense if you look at it from the lens of John Robinson's ego got in the way, and that's why they parted ways. Because with collaboration, not one person is bigger than the rest of the group. Not one person's decisions or opinions are bigger than anybody else's. And maybe that's what got in front of John Robinson. Maybe there were people telling him, hey, you know, maybe it's not the best idea to draft Caleb Farley when he's coming off of spinal reconstruction surgery and he didn't play this past year in college football. Maybe that's not the best idea. And maybe John Robinson had this, you know, this idea of Caleb Farley that they were going to get a bargain at the bottom half of the draft and that he was going to come in and be great, and he couldn't let that idea or his vision for Caleb Farley, and I'm just using that as an example, not saying that that was necessarily the case, that he couldn't let outside noise or outside advice get ahead of what his vision was for whatever draft pick or trade, you know, a Julio Jones, whatever it might be, that John Robinson let himself get bigger than the rest of the advisors or Mike Vrabel or Amy Adams Strunk or whoever else's opinions were put out there.
The way I sort of see it in listening to, you know, whether it's Tim that comes on, Hutt that comes on, or whoever that we have on, typically, you know, the first rounders, and I think even Rand said it in a sense, well, first rounders, like, listen, everybody's usually in agreement that this is the guy we're going to get. Like, everybody, if he's on the board, if he's there, you know, then we get him. If that's our need, we grab him. So I'm not too worried. I'm not so much worried. I'm not going to put that all on John, because I think, you know, whether it was Isaiah Wilson, whether it's Caleb Farley, I think they all were in together on drafting that person when it all was said and done. When they walked into that room and it came time to draft, I think they all agreed on this is the guy that we want to get. I think it's later on in the draft, the bottom half of the draft, the bottom half of this roster that wasn't good. In this business, you have to have an ego. Now, you can't let your ego supersede what the team is doing. Now, John might have felt that, listen, you know, I get to know these players, but I can't get too personal with them because I'm the one that's got to cut them, not Mike. Not anyone else. I got to be the one that makes the decision that, you know, hey, you got to go. Even though Mike's telling them, you know, but they got to go see the GM too. And Mike I mean, John couldn't get that close, but Mike could. And maybe, just maybe, sometimes when you get that close to a player, you don't see what the GM sees. Or if the GM gets too close to a player, you don't see what the coach see. Why? Because that relationship is clouding your vision. You hold on to guys a little bit too long, like a Ben Jones. What are they going to do with Ben Jones? We know Mike loves Ben Jones. But if you keep Ben Jones at the center position another year, that wouldn't be the right position, right decision as the starter. You need to get somebody to come in there that can play a full season young, that's ready to go. He can be your backup. He can be a guy that's there for you, but he can't be your starter. Same with Taylor Lewan. Same with some of these other guys on your team. You have to be able to, you build a great relationship with these guys, but you also got to be able to separate that relationship from the things that they're doing on the field. Like, listen, we got a great relationship, but we gotta part ways now. And maybe, just maybe, John didn't want to get that close because he knew ultimately, you know, that he was a part of cutting a player. Whereas Mike, he can get that close, you know, and he probably still can cut him. I don't know. But
it's a business.
Yeah, it's a business, and I'm pretty sure Mike understands that. He's been cut and signed and everything else, just like any other player out there. But this team, and I have been saying this for the whole season, this team, the bottom half of this team just wasn't good. Now, we can blame that on whoever we want to blame it on. You can blame it on John. You can blame it on Mike. You know, a lot of people are going to blame it on John because he's not here anymore. But the bottom half, the facts remains, the bottom half of this roster wasn't good enough. Why? Because when guys started getting hurt, we saw this team slowly go downhill. They didn't have anybody to turn to. Even going out and get Joshua Dobbs, that was an upgrade. But still, he wasn't a part of the team, you know, for the long run. The bottom half of this team, the starters were pretty good. If they could have stayed healthy, they'd have been fine. But we know the game, they're not. What happens when they get hurt? Who's able to step up? The guys that were able to step up just didn't play well.
I thought, in a lot of ways, though, they were pretty good at finding the real outsiders, like, you know, Adams and mm-hmm. You know, there's been a ton of them through the years that could plug holes, right? I don't think that was a bad job on defense.
That was only on defense.
I think you're probably right. That's fair. Probably more on defense than offense. Special teams, mm-hmm. maybe. But, you know, I feel like they had this revolving door of guys that would come and go that were, at times, they were on the practice squad. At times, I'm not even sure if they were on the roster, but they were kind of hanging around. Then they'd be back on the practice squad. You know, I lost track of them half the time.
There would be so many injury reports that I would look at and say, who the heck is that guy?
So I think any team with the number of their injuries mm-hmm. that they had the last 2 years would have struggled with the bottom half of the roster. But I think, to me, what it says is there's a little bit too small of a core. Like, you hope your core players are a little stronger collectively mm-hmm. So that when you have the injuries, the guys that are still there are overall just a little bit better. I think that's maybe the goal. That's maybe where they're missing. Plus, you got to have your top players be impactful, right? The guys you're relying on to have big years, like the guys they invested in, Robert Woods, Treylon Burks, Derrick Henry, you know, they had a varying amount. Derrick Henry had a pretty good year. Robert Woods, not real good.
Did not.
It was horrible.
Treylon Burks, not what they hoped, right? They hoped for more. You know, the Taylor Lewan, heavily invested. Didn't get through the second game. Like, you just go down the list. If you have those guys have good years, it would have made a big difference, I think.
And that's why I do wonder, you know, with ego. Paul Kaharsky says he thinks it was the ego that got in John Robinson's way. We can see very clearly that some of the drafting or some of the free agent acquisitions, trades that were made, they were bad moves. Like, Robert Woods, now looking back retrospectively, was a bad move. Robert Woods kept dropping balls. Robert Woods was almost a non-factor in so many games. Look at some of the drafting. Obviously, Isaiah Wilson was a bad pick. Obviously, Caleb Farley was a bad pick. It's easy for us to look at it and say, bad move. Was it not as easy for John Robinson to look at some of the moves that he had made and said, you know what, that was a bad move? And that's a tough thing to accept. That's a really hard thing to say, you know what, my bad, that's on me. So maybe that's how the Titans are trying to shift things, of You know, it's a collaboration. Everyone's responsible. Everyone is responsible, is held accountable. Everyone's responsible for making decisions and also responsible for when things don't go right. Is that the right way to run an organization? I don't know. But clearly whatever they were doing wasn't working. It's kind of like, you know, in elections, every year it seems like, you know, it's Democrat, Republican, because everybody wants what they didn't have before. Mm-hmm. They look at what they had before, it wasn't working, so we'll shift. I feel like that's kind of the same way here. Whatever we had, the chain of command wasn't working, so we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah, it could be. You know, it just, I look at it, you know, it should have always been this way, I thought. That's the way they portrayed it to be, mm-hmm. you know, that everybody is talking to everybody and we make decisions based on everybody's input, at least the head coach and the GM's input, and then we go from there. So if this roster is bad, you know, nobody is exempt in my eyes, because I understand to an extent what goes on. So to me, it's not just, oh, the GM and the coaches is over here. He doesn't take any of the blame, or it's just all a coach and it's not the GM. They both have a hand in this, because to me, they both – I'm not going to sit here and believe that now all of a sudden it's a collaboration. This had to be, you know, the thing that was spoken a lot. We're in a collaboration to build a good team. You know, we got to be in agreement on a lot of things. Now, some things, but a lot of things in regards to this team, we all got to be in an agreement on. So if they're just pumping this, you know, collaboration now, where in the hell was it, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago? Just like you said, like, where was the, hey, stop for a second, let me really get to know you. Where was that 2 years ago or 3 years ago? If you're now making it, it's one of those things that need to happen now. So where was the collaboration? When did y'all notice there was no more collaboration?
I guess after the Eagles game, because that's when the change was made. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to get your thoughts, calls, and texts on that. But coming up next, who was once one of the hottest commodities in the league, now nobody even wants to touch? And we'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
You know, you think to yourself, if Brian Daboll can get Daniel Jones to the playoffs, can Sean Payton get Russell Wilson to the playoffs? Well, Herbert and Mahomes are not playing in the NFC East. But I think one of the things that Sean Payton has to think about, and it's a real thing, with Daniel Jones, there are some limitations, but they're football limitations. You know what you have. It's right in front of you. But with Russell Wilson, there's self-awareness issues, trying to simultaneously be a football star and elevate Ciara's career issues. There's the isolation issues from teammates. He's got his own office. That's an issue. And his own chiropractor, I'm told. That's an issue. A lot of this stuff is personality, emotional, family stuff. That's way harder. The football stuff for a Brian Daboll or a Sean Payton, that's not as difficult. Wasn't it a little bit? And I'm a Russell Wilson fan.
There you go. That was Colin Cowherd. So it came out over the weekend. So, backtrack. Colin Cowherd and Sean Payton are bestie pups. They're close. He goes on the Herd all the time. Colin Cowherd is plugged into Sean Payton and Sean Payton's people. It was reported by Colin Cowherd that the Broncos have made a decision that they want to hire coach Sean Payton if he is interested. Russell Wilson told ownership that he wants Sean Payton as the next head coach. Says Colin Cowherd has a strong connection with Sean Payton and says it's now up to Sean Payton. And the example that Colin Cowherd gave there is, look, if Brian Daboll can turn Daniel Jones into a playoff quarterback, just think about what Sean Payton, one of the best offensive coaches in the league, when he was a coach in the league, mm-hmm. what he was able to do with Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. He has a Super Bowl. What could he do with Russell Wilson, a quarterback that we all know has natural talent, has won a Super Bowl? And then it also came out that this is from Benjamin Albright, who covers the NFL and is very plugged in with the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. Says, everything that I've heard, it doesn't appear that Sean Payton has much of a market. Jobs that he wanted didn't open outside of Denver, that hasn't been much interest. Strong possibility that he goes back to TV. So Sean Payton has an open invitation, is what it sounds like, per Colin Cowherd, mm-hmm. to go be the head coach for the Denver Broncos. Have Russell Wilson as your starting quarterback, and he's looking at it and saying, you know what? No thanks. I'd rather go back to TV. What does that say about Russell Wilson?
It says a lot. And I think Colin pointed to it. It's not the football stuff. You know, if it was just the football stuff, then we can deal with that. Brian Daboll dealt with Daniel Jones and the football stuff. He got Daniel Jones looking like a good quarterback, a quarterback you can win with. And I'm sure Sean Payton is looking at that situation and saying, and everybody's trying to figure this out. Why is it that Tom Brady can do it, like have this supermodel wife and this wife that is just, you know, has been everywhere. You know, her career has superseded his.
Breadwinner.
Exactly. But he has been able to make it about football. Like, Tom is about football and football only. And that probably was the demise of his relationship, sadly. But Tom is about football. He's not about, you know, listen, if you want to elevate your career, Giselle, you can do it. But I'm trying. Let me do my thing, too. Russell makes everybody looks at Russell and think just what Colin Cowherd said, that you're trying. You want to have your foot in the football world, but you want to have your foot in the entertainment world. Being a quarterback, you can't do both. You just can't do both. A receiver, yeah. A running back, yeah. A defensive back, yeah. You know why they can do it? Because they're not responsible for the whole team. A quarterback, you got to be locked in on one job and one job alone, and that's playing quarterback for your respective teams. You can't be trying to play quarterback and dabble in this entertainment world too. It's not going to work. And Sean Payton seems like the guy. Hell, he had Drew Brees that was all about football. So why do I want to go to the Denver Broncos where the quarterback is half in and half out? And you can't tell me as a quarterback, you can't tell me that, oh, coach, if you come, I'm going to be better. No, you're not, because you go home. I'm not going to fight that battle with you and your family. Your family's going to win every time. And I expect them to win every time. I don't want to fight that battle with you. Let somebody else fight it. I'll go back to television, make, you know, $13, $14 million and sit on the side until the job comes open that I want. But I don't want to have to deal with Russell and his antics and want to be in an entertainment world and want to, you know, make it seem as if he's doing more than everybody else. It's like, dude, I don't want to have to deal with that. I want a quarterback that's about football and football only.
Russell Wilson is such a boob. A total boob. I mean, the stretches on the airplane.
That's what I did. It's like, who cares?
And the whole, it's all about me. He has an office. He has his own personal masseuse.
But nobody would have said anything about this, about him, until this year. I find that interesting.
Because it wasn't, I think when it started to happen, that's when Pete Carroll was like, I think that's when their relationship went south. When he wasn't just the quarterback, when he wanted to be, and there's nothing wrong with that, Willie. Like, listen, I am not going to fight that battle if a head coach. I'm not going to fight that battle with you and your family. I expect your family to win every time. But I need a quarterback that knows how to prioritize. Like, listen, babe, when I go to work, during the season, it's all about football. I'm not trying to do anything else. It's all about football. Now, when the season's over with, now it's about family. You know, now I can really, you know, dig in my family. But right now, I'm in control. Like, the franchise sits on my shoulders. That's a big reason. That's why everybody can't be a quarterback.
Yeah. But I just think it's interesting how it's all shifted. Mm-hmm. And I will use this again to insert Jared last year campaigning hard for the Titans to trade for Russell Wilson for three first-round picks, and Kevin Byard. That's what Jared, GM, was ready to trade without a plan for what to do with Tannehill. But that's what he thought of Russell Wilson. So we can all sit here and say in hindsight, well, Russell Wilson, what a goofball, man. What's he doing with all this stuff? But Russell Wilson won a lot of games over a lot of years and had enough pull that the Broncos invested heavily in him. They gave up a lot. They didn't give up what Jared was willing to give up, but they gave up quite a bit to get him, signed him to a contract that they can't get out of now. So, I mean, who would blame Sean Payton for not wanting to walk into that? Because to succeed in the league, not only do you have to have a really good quarterback, but also if you want to change your quarterback, if they wanted to change, they can't change the quarterback. They're so locked in to what they've committed to Russell Wilson. And so it's a lot of things have changed in a year.
It's wild to see how the perception changes when you stop winning. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't have traded three first-round picks and Kevin Byard for Russell Wilson, but I think we all viewed Russell Wilson as probably a top five to top ten quarterback
I didn't consider him a top five quarterback. I've always said he's not an elite quarterback. He's not.
The Broncos at least viewed him as
that. Yeah, they have viewed him as that.
And
yeah.
I think that
they thought
make...
they had everything else. That's why they were feeling like this was the time to do it, because they felt like they had the defense, mm-hmm. they had the young receivers, they had the running back. They were like, okay, all we need is the quarterback.
And they did what they could to get the quarterback. And now here we are, Sean Payton, an offensive guru head coach, who's looking at a quarterback that just 1 year ago, at least one franchise in the NFL was able to trade picks to go get him, for him to build the franchise around him. And now he's saying no thanks. And honestly, I got a little bit concerned about, you know, the Broncos, an AFC team, Sean Payton and a Russell Wilson marriage. Maybe Sean Payton can fix whatever Russell Wilson needed fix that Nathaniel Hackett couldn't fix. And now Sean Payton saying, I don't even want a piece of Russell Wilson. It's the play. It's the losing. It's the off-the-field antics. I mean, there was an unidentified NFL GM that spoke to Mike Sando of The Athletic and said, Denver has the best tradition. New owners seem aggressive and willing to spend, but I think Russell Wilson is washed. The lack of draft capital is holding them back, and it's true. So now where does Denver stand? They don't have a coach. They don't have any picks because they traded all those picks for a quarterback that looks like a doofus both on and off the field, and they don't have a coach. So I think Denver is in a really tough spot right now. And they did it to themselves.
Yeah, they don't have a, at that position. Across the board, I think you got to be all in as a player in order to play this game. But I think more specifically at the quarterback position, you have to be. I mean, you have to ask any quarterback out there that have started. You have to be all in. It can't be anything else. It can't be all these endorsements. That's why you don't see, you know, Manning and Brady and Brees doing all these things off the field during the season, because it's all about the team and trying to put the team in the best position to win. And they understand that the weight of the team is on their shoulders. They don't play defense. They understand. But they know even though they don't play defense, that the team succeeds based upon what they do at the quarterback position.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the week of football, both coming up and in the past. His thoughts on Rand Carthon and the future of the Titans in 2023. All of that with Jonathan Hutton. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.